welcome to today's episode of Gone Fishin' Nuclear Report. This podcast is your one-stop information source for news about Department of Energy's environmental management activities around the nation. DOE is now engaged in the largest environmental remediation program in history, cleaning up nuclear production sites across the U.S. that were used to support national security missions for 75 years. Some of the work on these sites dates back to the super-secret Manhattan Project, a national priority to develop the first atomic bomb that helped end World War II. Cleanup of these sites is a multi-decade effort, requiring thousands of trained professionals and highly skilled craftspeople with budgets in the billions of dollars. Each week, the Gone Fishin' Nuclear Report will bring you the latest news about developments in the DOE environmental management complex. Now, with today's report, here's our host, Michael Butler.
Hello. Welcome to today's episode of the Gone Fishin' Nuclear Report. Today is Monday, November 22nd, 2021. We have a great program for you today, starting with all the latest environmental management news from DOE sites around the country. Then we'll talk to a man whose career at DOE sites spans more than 50 years. Dr. Harold Connor is an industry pioneer with an impressive string of firsts on his resume. The one-time plant manager at the Oak Ridge Gases Diffusion Plant, in its operational heyday, Harold returned to Oak Ridge to participate in the demolition and cleanup of the historic K-25 plant. We'll talk to him about the full circle of his career later in today's program. But first, let's get the latest news from across the complex. Joining me is Gone Fishin' correspondent KB.
Thanks, Mike. The COVID pandemic has been a huge factor in the ongoing DOE environmental program for the past 21 months. DOE and its contractors have been diligent in their efforts to protect the workforce, even as they continue to make notable progress in cleanup across the complex. Last week, employees at UCOR in Oak Ridge returned to the office on a two-day-a-week basis after months of working from home, with a November 1 deadline requiring all employees to be vaccinated. At the Savannah River site, DOE manager Michael Budney told the Citizens Advisory Board that the vaccination mandate will not disrupt work at SRS. Budney said a very, very small portion of the workforce elected not to get vaccinated. That led to early retirements, resignations, or terminations, which Budney said were anticipated. Dozens of employees of SRS, M&O contractor, Savannah River Nuclear Solutions, sued their employer in October over the vaccine mandate. SRNS has asked the court to dismiss the suit. An SRS spokesperson said the vaccination requirement will not disrupt the critical work we do every day.
There's big news in Hanford's tank waste treatment program this week. DOE Environmental Management announced that construction readiness assessments are complete on the tank-side cesium removal system, or TESCR. This was a high priority for EM this year. Transitioning TESCR from the building and testing phase to operations is a major step forward toward treating 56 million gallons of tank waste stored at Hanford. The TESCR system is critical to beginning the treatment process using Hanford's Direct Feed Low Activity Waste, or DFLAW, program. It will remove radioactive cesium and undissolved solids from waste currently stored in large underground tanks. This is in preparation for vitrification, the process of immobilizing waste in glass. The waste treated through TESCR will be stored in a double shell tank until it is fed directly to the low activity waste facility that is part of the waste treatment and immobilization plant.
Question: how long can you keep an underground waste storage facility operating? Answer: a lot longer if you don't count the air in the storage cask. That's what's happening at the Waste Isolation Pilot Plant, or WIP. A judge in New Mexico has rejected an appeal by two watchdog groups who protested a decision to approve DOE's revised method for calculating underground waste volumes at the Waste Isolation Pilot Plant. The New Mexico Environment department had approved the new calculations, which measure only the waste within the innermost drums and don't include the air between the waste and the outer drums. The change in how the waste is counted shifted the repository from being halfway to capacity to only a third full. The facility has a statutory limit of 6.2 million cubic feet of transuranic, or true waste, consisting of clothing materials and equipment irradiated during nuclear activities. Albuquerque-based watchdog groups, Southwest Research and Information Center, and Nuclear Watch New Mexico appealed the state's regulatory's decision. The groups had argued that WIPP was intended as a pilot project to demonstrate how nuclear waste could be disposed of on a temporary basis and opposed any actions that would extend its lifespan. The judge argued that when the WIPP permit was approved and the facility began accepting waste in 1999, it was assumed incorrectly that the drums would be full of waste and did not account for air. The judge said the previous calculation method meant the facility's capacity would be underutilized.
Students have long believed that internships are a great way to get your foot in the door and perhaps land a full-time job. That's been proven true at the Hanford site, where one program has led to hiring more than two dozen interns as engineers over the past 8 years. Hanford Mission Integration Solutions, a Richland Operations Office contractor, has implemented a strong mentoring component and built tangible experience leading to career planning and decisions. About 30% of the current HMIS engineering team began working at the company through the intern program.
And Mike, finally, in contract news, one of the unsuccessful bidders for the $8 billion Oak Ridge cleanup contract has filed a protest challenging DOE's award of the contract to United Cleanup Oak Ridge, or UCOR. UCOR is a partnership of Amentum, Jacobs, and Honeywell. The protesting bidder was not identified. The Government Accountability Office, or GAO, has 100 days or until mid-February to rule on the protest.
Well, that's the latest news from environmental management across the DOE complex. And now here's our conversation with this week's spotlight guest, Dr. Harold Connor. We're pleased today to have Dr. Harold Connor as our guest. Harold is well known in the Department of Energy complex and throughout the industry, and he has quite a story. Over a five-decade career, Harold rose from an internship to become plant manager of the Oak Ridge Gaseous Diffusion Plant, held senior management positions at other DOE sites across the country, and ultimately returned to Oak Ridge to participate in the cleanup of the K-25 site. Most of you know K-25 is now the East Tennessee Technology Park and is home to industries that are on the cutting edge of technology and creating new jobs in the Oak Ridge area. Harold's too modest to tell you, but he has earned numerous recognitions throughout his career. He is a fellow with the American Institute of Chemical Engineers. He's a recipient of the Muddy Boot Award, which recognizes those who've made notable contributions to the Oak Ridge community. In 2014, he received the UT Knoxville Alumni Professional Achievement Award and the Secretary of Energy Award of Achievement. He serves on the University of Tennessee Nuclear Engineering Department Board of Advisors and has also been named a fellow, the highest professional distinction by the American Society of Safety Professionals. The universal respect he enjoys was highlighted by the naming of a laboratory for him at the American Museum of Science and Energy. The Dr. Harold Connor Jr. Laboratory was unveiled at a 2019 retirement celebration at the museum. Harold, welcome.
Welcome. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, we're happy to have you. Let's start the conversation today with your early days. You're a product of the civil rights era of the 1960s and the son of school teachers. You attended segregated schools in West Tennessee through high school and later became the first African-American student
to participate in the University of Tennessee's Engineering Co-op program. You continue to break barriers in your professional career, being named the first African-American to be honored as a fellow by the American Institute of Chemical Engineers. It was the UT Co-op program that launched your impressive years of service with the Department of Energy and other nuclear-related projects. Talk a little bit about your days at UT and your decision to study chemical engineering.
Well, it's interesting that you bring that up. I think you did mention the fact that my mom and dad were teachers, and actually my mom was a second grade teacher, and my dad was initially a ninth grade science teacher and ultimately became the principal of the school that I attended. So you can imagine listening to them at home and then listening to them at school. So I never had a break from mom and dad. But those early days, you mentioned about chemical engineering. My dad was a science instructor, and I guess in those early days, engineering just fascinated me. And believe it or not, I chose to be a chemical engineer at a very early age. So that was something I said I would always do. And as you mentioned, those early days, I graduated high school in 1963. And as you might imagine, in those early years, the University of Tennessee at Martin, the hometown I was in, I was the first African-American entering into the School of Engineering. So, you know, it was very interesting. The sense of being the first, doing the homework by myself, introducing myself to instructors on the campus, and all of that was really stressful. Of course, I'm bald now, basically, but I had a head full of hair in those days, an afro, and actually, that first semester or first quarter, I was at the University of Tennessee Martin, my hair started falling out. And I'm thinking, what's up with this? And it was the stress and strain of being the first, I guess. But I want to quickly say that the instructors and the other students, they all were very supportive. You know, I had a lot of people at, you know, holding me up and at my back, and not only my family and friends, but also the people at the university. So, as you stated, it was a first, and I entered the co-op engineering program in 1964, 1 year after starting University of Tennessee Martin. And as the good Lord would have it, I ended up in the Oak Ridge, Tennessee community, working at the Oak Ridge K-25 site. So I was the first cooperative engineering student that was African-American. And once again, I had all the support and in those early days working at the site. So when you really think about it, I guess I was first in several categories, but actually I didn't look at it that way. I looked at it as an opportunity to get experience as a young chemical engineering student. And ultimately I went on to graduate in 1968 from that University of Tennessee, Knoxville.
Well, tell us about your early days at K-25. What were those days like, and how did you rise in the ranks to become plant manager?
Well, it was interesting. I started out as a cooperative engineering student in 1964 and, you know, got jobs of increasing importance and got interested in safety and nuclear facilities and as a technician and as a understudy to engineers that were actively involved in research and development activities at the Oak Ridge K-25 site. So, you know, I continued to do that through 1966, about 2.5 years of the co-oping, which meant I was in school one quarter and working at the Oak Ridge site the next quarter. And ultimately, in 1968, I graduated, you know, with my bachelor's degree in chemical engineering from the University of Tennessee. So, oddly enough, I went back, you know, I had several job offers when I got my bachelor's, and obviously I chose Oak Ridge because I had worked there as a co-op student and I was quite familiar with the site and the people there. So that was the decision I made. And obviously over the years, I had several R&D projects and went from just a newly hired chemical engineer to a group leader and ultimately a section leader, which had many more people reporting to me, department head and division manager. And, you know, it was, I guess, in the early 90s or late 80s, I actually rose to a level of deputy plant manager or site manager, and then ultimately became the site manager in charge of the whole site. You know, here's this little black boy from Martin, Tennessee that came up through the ranks at the Oak Ridge K-25 site, and suddenly I'm the site manager. So it was quite a journey, and with God's mercy and blessing, I attained that position.
Well, that is quite a journey, and your journey continued. You went around the DOE complex and held various senior management positions, and then eventually you returned back to Oak Ridge, kind of taking your career full circle at a time when the K-25 site was being cleaned up. The buildings were being demolished and cleaned up. And so how did it feel to come back to the site after that number of years and see everything being torn down after you'd been the plant manager?
Well, that's an interesting saga of events, as you indicated earlier, you know, becoming the site manager and, you know, working on my master's degree for several years and end up going around the uranium enrichment complex, spending time at Paducah, Kentucky, and Portsmouth, Ohio. And all those things were, you know, covered some 33 years, you know, and when most people are deciding to retire, it seemed like that my career took a different turn, and I started in my mind traveling around the United States at these various Department of Energy complexes. So I ended up Savannah River site in Aiken, South Carolina, the Idaho National Laboratory in Idaho Falls, Idaho, the Livermore National Lab in Livermore, California, and I did time also at the Los Alamos, New Mexico site. And at a time when most people are thinking about retirement, I spent the next 20 years, basically, from the time I left the K-25 site, all around the DOE complex and the NNSA sites. And it's just amazing. And you know, when the, I guess when I left the K-25 site, they had started the environmental remediation and the deactivation, decommissioning effort at the site, but I was off everywhere else. Lawrence Livermore Lab, Aiken, South Carolina, I was there. And actually, I knew of the work being done at the K-25 site to actually go through decommissioning and ultimately deactivation and dismantling of those nuclear facilities. And as part of God's plan, those activities, you know, I left the Lawrence Livermore National Lab as Associate Director for Facilities and Infrastructure and got a call from Ken Reuter, who was the president and CEO at that time of the East Tennessee Technology Park, which had been renamed after the Oak Ridge K-25 site was going through this environmental remediation. So I actually came full circle, came back to a site where I had started as a 17-year-old co-op student. Now I was coming back as a director at the same place that I had started as a co-op student. And the whole nuclear decommissioning of that site is just a great story, you know, from the days when I left the site doing my globetrotting around the DOE complex. You know, it was started early, and I guess some 20-year journey of the nuclear decommissioning that was going on at the K-25 site. And now, you know, I was part of the celebration in 2020 when they, you know, were able to say that they had successfully decommissioned the first gaseous diffusion plant in history in the world. And obviously that was a huge success, and credit to the UCOR team for making that happen. And as God would have it, I was a part of that huge success. And I came back, you know, to a site where I had actually run those facilities. And now I was part of demolition of those same nuclear facilities.
Can you comment on what you see as the overall benefit of DOE's environmental cleanup program, not only in Oak Ridge, but nationwide? Why is this program important? We're spending billions of dollars across multiple DOE sites, and it's taking decades of effort by a lot of skilled folks. What's the ultimate benefit of that cleanup program as far as you see it?
A repurposing, reindustrialization, you know, those facilities are no longer needed. They're legacy facilities. They have enriched many kg of enriched uranium materials. They have provided the pieces and parts for nuclear weapons and also peacetime nuclear reactor. So those facilities obviously need to be repurposed, allow reinvestment from industrial entities, make conservation areas and national parks. And that's one of the beauties of the K-25 site, that after the D&D activities, and, you know, there's a lot of reindustrialization going on there, new companies on site, conservation areas, part of a National Historic Park Service. And it has achieved and is achieving the grand plan of the whole purpose of environmental remediation, to make these facilities once again vibrant and vital to people that want to use them for other purposes.
All right, that's a good analysis of the program and the need for it. You're active with the University of Tennessee Nuclear Program. You're a member of the advisory board at the Department of Nuclear Engineering, and very active on the campus in telling the story of environmental cleanup and the value of decommissioning. As a matter of fact, UT has introduced the first decommissioning minor in the country, now offers that to their students. Tell us a little bit about that training that's being offered to students at UT to get into the decommissioning and environmental cleanup arena.
Well, that's been a joy. You know, the fact that, you know, at this point in my career, when I'm basically semi-retired and I can work more with the University of Tennessee, my alma mater, and other universities and historically Black colleges and universities as well, Tennessee State and Benedict College and North Carolina A&T State University. But it's just been a joy to become more intimately involved with the University of Tennessee and its students and the curriculum. You know, the minor that you reference, the nuclear decommissioning and environmental management minor in the Department of Nuclear Engineering, it is just a huge success of a need for industry and academia to collaborate and partner, you know, in making them both more successful. And the need for students to become expert in nuclear decommissioning was great. And obviously, as I talked about earlier, the need for decommissioning these nuclear reactors, nuclear facilities across the world with a several hundred year program to accomplish that, multiple billion dollar programs and several decades to make that in effect happen. It's such a great undertaking that UCOR and the University of Tennessee decided, hey, we're going to set up this curriculum and have this minor available for students to participate. And it's been very successful for these years. And actually, we've hired some students that have gone through that program at UCOR and in other industrial entities. So first of its kind that we know of, and UCOR has led the way, and I've been lucky to be a part of that.
You spend a lot of time talking to students. You're in front of a lot of student groups. You're pretty popular on the speaking trail with students. What's your message to them? What do you have to say to students today who are looking ahead to their careers?
Building relationships. That's what I preach to anyone that'll listen, that how important it is to get your academic preparation, but it's also more important that to enter the workforce and understand to get work accomplished, you have to build relationships. And no one can sit in their office or in their own location and decide what needs to happen to affect success in any project or any major project. You can't do it alone. You enable others, and you have to build relationships. You have to make the best balanced decision when it comes to decisions that affect the project. So the message I give students is, you know, the academics will come. Obviously, you have to complete the work. But when you get out there, you know, use your church, your community, your fellow project team, enable others, challenge each other, have a common vision, encourage each other. And that's what I tell students. And if I had to point to anything that has helped me along the way, it would be that, being able to challenge the system and have a vision, be part of teams, model the way and encourage each other. So that's what I tell students. That's what I tell anyone that will listen to me.
Harold, thank you for being with us today. Your story is impressive and inspiring. And we thank you for all you've done for our industry and what you continue to do to prepare the workforce for tomorrow in the nuclear industry, particularly in the environmental cleanup. And we appreciate you joining us today.
Well, thank you very much for having me, and it's been a pleasure.